If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we are discussing privilege and polyamory, the different advantages and disadvantages that are easy to forget about when approaching non-traditional relationships.
And I hope you enjoy, those of you who are watching the YouTube video, that for our discussion on privilege, we're sitting in this tropical paradise.
I know.
Yes. At least it seems that way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jace and I are currently dog-sitting for some friends who live by the beach in this, like, amazing, amazing home.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really lovely.
And Emily came down to visit.
Yes, it is.
And so Paul is here somewhere.
Yeah.
He's been over there playing with the dogs and Pokemon.
So for like a week, we get to experience the privilege of having a gigantic home.
Yeah,
having a nice big home on the beach.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because why not?
This is pretty amazing. All right. So how do we start this off?
Well, okay. So privilege. I feel like it's definitely been a buzzword.
Yes,
at least in for quite a while. That we move in.
Yeah. Especially in talking about polyamory as well, because there has been a lot of talk lately about it only being for the privileged, only being a thing that white upper middle class educated people do.
Yeah.
Right,
and I think people get scared talking about privilege, or privileged people get scared talking about privilege, because it can surprisingly become a very emotionally charged topic when I really don't think that it has to be.
Yeah.
Actually, when we break it down.
Sure. Yeah.
Why do you think people get triggered by it?
Well, I think that if we come up to someone and they're successful or happy with their life or are proud of the things they've accomplished and we talk about privilege, that people often conflate privilege with, like, oh, it was all easy for me, you know?
Right.
Or that they didn't work hard to get to
the place that they didn't make efforts, that they didn't work hard, things like that.
And it's a tricky thing because often when people do accuse someone of having privilege, they are kind of meaning it that way. Like, that's the tricky part, is that I think from both sides, it's easy to get too defensive about it. But it is also from another side to kind of be like, oh, well, whatever, everything you did was easy because you were privileged.
Yeah.
Right? That it can come from either side, that it can be this difficult thing of conflating privilege with meaning you didn't have to work for anything.
Well, but
you didn't have to try hard for
anything.
But,
like, I have a problem with talking about privilege because of the fact that we tend to put it on this, like, linear scale of easy to difficult.
Sure.
And, like, that's all we're operating on. And my whole big thing, like, so the same way that I get frustrated that we put human sexuality on this scale of, like, gay to straight, when really it's more like a web, you know, that I feel the same way about privilege and disadvantage as well, that it's not like you're on this scale of having an easy time or having a difficult time, that it's, like, different arenas are going to be easier or more difficult for you, or more complicated or more simple or whatever, depending on different layers of identity, which is all, you know, intersectionality, which is a whole other podcast topic.
Yeah.
Well, I do think that's worth addressing.
Oh, for sure.
What intersectionality really is, because that's also starting to be, like, a little more of a buzzword, at least amongst the people who, you know, are on my social media or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, do you care to explain it?
Well, Dedeker's been the one who's been reading up on this.
Yeah, my first inroad into intersectionality was through the term intersectional feminism specifically. Mm-hmm. And it was this idea that, you know, so feminism is this certain body of beliefs, but it's really important to look at it through an intersectional lens, as in recognizing that, like, the issues facing a white woman are different from the issues facing a black woman, are different from issues facing a trans woman.
Yeah.
You know, and so that the feminist agenda can't necessarily just be painted with this broad brush about what needs to be prioritized or not. And again, it's not placing it on the, like, well, this group suffers more, this group suffers less, but it's kind of like we both suffer and enjoy different advantages differently from each other based on these complex identities.
Yeah,
and that it does focus on kind of understanding the differences and the different challenges for people. rather than just trying to say who has it better or worse.
So I think that's the important thing to keep in mind when discussing privilege and disadvantage, is that it gets really easy for people to attach to just one factor mm-hmm. of like gender or race, and to mm-hmm. kind of use that one factor to determine everything about what a person's privilege might be, when really it's very, very complex.
Yeah.
Right. And that none of us can really know what another person's life is like without yes. without living it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that we created this big old list of kind of different factors that would affect your privilege or lack thereof. Mm-hmm. And some of them are very obvious, things that come up a lot in our daily lives and in news coverage and things like that.
Right.
Things like race is probably mm-hmm. the yeah. biggest one that's been at the forefront for quite a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a subsidiary of race-based privilege. Of a subsidiary of race privilege is skin color, and they're not exactly the same thing.
Right.
Yeah, because there's passing.
Yeah, of course, there's passing. If people can pass as white, mm-hmm. they're more likely to have privilege. If they're lighter skinned, if they're mm-hmm. still a person of color but lighter skinned, they
right.
are more likely to be treated better or
right.
seen as trustworthy or seen as good than someone who has much darker skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we see this in other countries as well that definitely mm-hmm. will sort of give more favoritism to a certain type of skin tone over another one or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, regardless of, like, even if their dominant culture is not Caucasian, even within their own, there will still be some discrimination with skin color.
Skin color.
Like, that is
yeah.
something that can transcend just race-based.
Yeah.
I heard once that wolves do the same thing, actually.
Oh, really?
No, really. I need to corroborate this. I think I learned this from a Barbara Kingsolver novel.
Really? Which one?
I forget which one, but
High Tides in Tucson.
I think it was Prodigal Summer.
Okay.
I think that like wolves, if the pack is primarily a particular color of fur, and one comes along that's like significantly darker or significantly lighter, that they're more likely to be weird
not
to that
be as
one.
Friendly to it. Huh.
Really but to be fair, like, it came out of a novel, so maybe she was just pulling it out of her ass.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Have to research that.
So gender identity is another one.
Of course,
one.
Yeah, that's another one that's really at the forefront.
Right, so
yeah.
Gender identity meaning not only, not only whether you're male or female, because that's something that gets talked about a lot, but also just whether you are cisgender or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, whether you identify with the gender that other people see you as.
Totally.
Yeah.
Right now I'm experiencing a lack of privilege because a bug just flew into my drink.
And we will often tell men,
and like, you guys have
check
the privilege.
Your male privilege. Yes,
I'm having
that's
a drink
true.
Without a bug in it? Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That gender is sort of an easy one because mm-hmm. we do tend to divide people a lot along those lines.
Yeah.
But some others that might not be as obvious are things like level of education.
Mm-hmm.
I know this one people might be like, what are you talking about? But there is definitely, you know, just based on the amount of education that you have could give you advantages in certain fields and mm-hmm. even could give you advantages in dating.
Yeah.
Yes,
right?
Definitely.
If that's the dating pool that you're looking
yeah.
at.
Yeah. I definitely, for a long time, if I found out that like someone that I was dating had not gone to college, it gave me pause and made me think like, wow, what's wrong with that person uh-huh. that they didn't go to college? Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's as prevalent now.
Well, you know, it's so funny because like when I was in college and mm-hmm. I had friends who had chosen not to go to college, that I had those same thoughts of like, what is wrong with this person? Like,
yeah.
maybe they're like a little bit more mm-hmm. of a failure or something like
sure,
that. When
yeah.
I realized like that's so generational. That,
it is.
Like I think
yeah.
our parents' generation really pushed everyone needs to go to college
right.
yeah.
or else you are going to be a failure
yeah.
and a dropout.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we saturated the market with college degrees and
right.
here
yeah.
we are. But
now they're
but, you know, it wasn't for many years that I realized, like, actually, you know what? Not only is college not accessible to everybody.
For sure.
But at least in the United States. But also, like, it's just not the right choice for everybody
yeah.
at the same
right.
time.
But it's not really necessary for everybody.
Yeah.
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 yeah. And going along with a level of education is also socioeconomic status.
Yeah.
Because I do think that going to college is sort of tied into this socioeconomic status of like, oh, if you've gone to college, it means you're more well-to-do or whatever.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Even though it might really just put you more in debt.
Well, that's the thing is it's yeah. either like it could be that like you could afford to get into like a very, very prestigious, very expensive school.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Which
or
could
that your
be because
could afford to
yeah, which
send
could
you.
Be because your parents are rich, or it could be because mm-hmm. like you're anticipating to take on a bunch of debt.
Yeah.
You know, and
right.
you're okay with that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or socioeconomic status also in terms of, you know, your level of income.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff you have. Do you have this beautiful backyard where you can invite all your partners over for a barbecue? Or do you live, you know, with roommates in an apartment?
Yeah, well, so that's the other thing is, like, you can imagine, like, two people who maybe go to the same college, maybe, like, mid-range university or something like that. And then the person who comes from a background where they're rich enough that, like, they don't have to work their way through
another
college
job,
versus the person who does have to take on three jobs so they can afford going through college. It's like, even though they could be studying the same subject, they could be equally as smart.
Right.
You know, they could be have just as much potential as each other, but because of that slightly, you know, different background and privilege, it may affect their entire future and how that, you know, affects them.
So or the mom who, like, has to work during the day and then go to night school.
And then go to night school, exactly.
Yeah, in the evening.
Exactly, yeah.
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 You want to give us another one?
Yeah, another one that people don't think about is ethnic background, which, again, is different from race. Ethnic background. And then another one that I didn't even think about till I was researching, doing research for the book, was also refugee status.
Yeah.
And that's something that has become suddenly very relevant, you know, with all these discussions around whether or not to let in a certain number of Syrian refugees or refugees who are coming from, you know, Muslim-majority countries, or even people who are refugees coming from South and Central America.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, certainly.
Right.
This is one that I know nothing about.
That's on our list is religion.
I suppose.
Well, I mean, that is an interesting question, like, because I feel as though I'm the minority. Paul and I were actually talking about this on the way up. He's like, you're in the minority of people that I know, because almost everyone that I know had a religious background growing up, and you didn't. That's very odd. And I don't know if it necessarily made me less or more privileged.
It kind of depends on where you grow up, what communities you move in. If you're an atheist, like, in a lot of, especially very Christian communities, that's a very dirty word.
Really?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look at the United States, we have never had a president who's anything but Christian.
Exactly.
You're right.
Every single one.
And it can be very
Jewish president.
Well, and it can be very simple things, like, whatever it is that your chosen religion is, like, is there a place of worship in your town?
Sure.
And it's like, if you're Christian, like, I can guarantee, like, chances are, at least in the United States, you'll probably be able to find a church quite easily. Whether it's in your chosen denomination or not, that's a different story, but probably much easier than if you're a Muslim or a Buddhist or anybody else.
Then we also have disability. And this can be both physical and mental disability. And this is a big one that I think a lot of people, it's easy to forget about.
Definitely.
You know, when you are kind of taking an inventory of what kind of privilege do I have, is that a lot of people forget about this one and just kind of take for granted that everyone else's body works the same as theirs, or that everyone else's brain works the same as theirs,
I had this interesting, actually, I saw this really interesting thread where people were, actually, it was kind of a controversial thread, I believe, in a solo polyamory group, because, you know, obviously the tenets of solo polyamory usually involve, like, not wanting to cohabit with somebody.
Right.
And some certain solo polyamorous being like, yes, like, I totally agree with this and I'm into that, but, like, I have this disability where, like, I need someone to care for me. Like, I need someone to live with me, whether that's a romantic partner or not. And so if I choose to live with a romantic partner because I need someone to care for me, does that mean that, like,
I'm in couples privilege
mode, you know?
I'm going to be shunned by the solo polyamorous
community. Exactly, like, these things that we really don't necessarily think about.
Which, I mean, kind of, like we talked about in our solo poly episode, and I think is important to bring up for this talk about privilege as well, is that it's not sort of one's better than another. That I think it's really easy to, in these discussions, get attached to the idea that, like, the less privilege I have, the better person I am somehow, right? Or people will try to really, you know, come up with ways to show how other people have more privilege than them, because that makes them feel better. And I think same with solo poly, that idea of, like, people can think, oh, well, I have to be this, this, and that in order to be the most solo poly, because somehow that's better.
Somehow it's better if I'm super independent.
I mean, also, even just the discussion about polyamory at all, that we can, people can easily get caught up in the idea that polyamory is somehow more evolved or more enlightened.
Just better,
So with all of this, it's not there's not a value to it.
No, there's not a better or worse.
They're just things to be aware of.
Sure.
Yeah, things so, to understand.
Age, one that I definitely have like tried to come to terms with as I've gotten older.
A privilege around surrounding age, well, or sure. lack thereof surrounding age.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, just that especially within Los Angeles, for instance, in this mm-hmm. area, that, you know, everything that's coveted is young and beautiful mm-hmm. and sexualized and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. if you are those things, you're going to be seen as privileged.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, older people, I guess they can put a privilege upon themselves saying, like, well, I'm older and wiser. But
well, it depends on the arena, right?
For
it could
sure.
Be like
absolutely.
In a career arena, it could be like, no, you're far too young.
Yeah. And you haven't lived enough.
You haven't lived enough yeah. or things like that. Yeah. I think it's interesting because I feel like discussions around ageism show up specifically in the poly community on both sides of the fence. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I see people talking about, like, I'm an older poly person, and I feel like no one wants me, no one wants to sure. hang out with me, no one even wants to date me when I go to these poly events. And then also right. people who are like, I'm a younger poly person, I just feel like it's a bunch of old geezers and old hippies, and yeah. there's no one who's my age. So, yeah,
right.
it goes
yeah.
across the whole
yeah.
spectrum.
It can kind of depend. That's uh-huh. true.
Yeah.
Related to what we were talking about a little bit with disability, but it's also living situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in a place where you have to have a roommate, or
sure.
maybe you don't have a house that's...
like
you know, it's like this where you can't have like sleepovers very easily or live with multiple partners.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Certainly. Yeah.
Or maybe you're in a situation where you have roommates or you're living with family members who are not okay with what you're doing with your life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like bringing someone over to stay the night is just not an option.
Yeah.
You certainly.
Know, maybe you can't
yeah.
be out.
Yeah.
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 Definitely.
Another one kind of going along with that is relationship status.
Mm. Yeah.
And this comes up a lot as couples privilege. And then there's also married privilege, which
yeah.
is kind of like a subset of couples privilege,
uh-huh.
But where there is, you know, definitely some advantages to being married in terms of how people view you, how you're
yeah.
looked at. I guess I could also argue there are some disadvantages when it comes to dating being married. Some
well,
people would argue
course.
That's harder, actually.
Exactly. Yeah, we just got that email from a person who was married saying that mm-hmm. it was challenging at times because... they felt as though, like, there was always... that people viewing the married couple would always put that hierarchically as
right.
the number
yeah.
one.
Even if they didn't have it themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That they would view
would.
Them as, yeah. like, oh, well, that person's number one. I'm never going to reach that point or
well,
whatever.
The cool thing, yeah. though, about that email was that
yeah.
they were making the choice to consensually and mutually
divorce
like,
yeah.
dissolve their marriage,
great.
But they were still going to stay together. But
yeah.
it was for that
right.
to kind of, like... I mean, this is a horrible...
Level the playing field.
Yeah, to level
yeah.
the playing field is a horrible term for it,
but
that kind of getting rid of that, even the suggestion of that power
yeah.
structure being there, which
right.
I thought was really cool that they would be able to, like, do that
yeah,
and,
it's
not,
very mindful.
And not have it be this, like, super emotional,
yeah.
dramatic thing.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
The other part of married privilege or couples privilege is what we've called here is passing privilege,
mm-hmm.
which is basically the idea that you might be polyamorous, but in your normal day-to-day life, you can pass as a... quote, normal monogamous
yes.
couple,
yeah.
right? And there's definitely advantages that come to that
yeah, of course.
In terms of all sorts of things.
Yeah, because right? because the dyad, the married dad, is what we're so used to seeing
right.
versus somebody who's maybe raising a child with two partners together
yeah.
and they don't have the choice necessarily to try to pass as just a couple.
Right. Right.
Or someone who doesn't want to pass as a couple, you know,
yeah.
who's
right.
quite happy to forego that privilege
mm-hmm.
in exchange of being out.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
We were also bringing up that other types of non-monogamy, like swingers, for example,
yeah.
have a much easier time passing because those also... generally are not relationships that you would be like out on a date with someone else who's not
yeah.
your husband
exactly.
or wife or boyfriend or girlfriend
yeah.
or whoever.
You can kind of keep things very private.
Yeah.
Right, right. So that it's just like, oh yeah, in my normal life I never have to deal with any of those
yeah.
concerns that would come from having these other relationships.
Absolutely.
Because it's all a secret thing.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Yeah, tell me about the sexual privilege one. Who added that?
Yeah, so sexual privilege, and what I mean here is... being a sexual person.
Mm, interesting.
And that this is specifically about someone who might be asexual, for example.
Right.
There's definitely, you know, we talked about in an earlier episode this concept of amato normativity.
Mm-hmm.
The
oh,
idea,
you finally used the word.
I know, I'm using the word
finally.
Now. That with amato normativity is this idea that everyone wants, like, it's sort of thought of as universal that everyone wants sex.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you how many, like, advice columns and other things out there are kind of based on the assumption that everybody wants sex. Even, like, a lot of the arguments for polyamory are specifically kind of focused on sex and the fact that we all want it and that we don't want it with just one person, things like that. And it's like, well, what about these people who don't want to have sex at all? Like, that's not a thing they're interested in. In terms of when you think about that in comparison, the amount of privilege you have if you're someone who does like to have sex in terms of dating.
Yeah.
It's much easier to find people who expect you to have sex with them to date than someone who's okay with not.
Yeah.
And I hope that awareness of this is increasing some.
Yeah.
And there's a whole spectrum of this, too, you know,
of
in terms of what kinds of sex you either want or that you can do.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe physically you might have certain limitations that would limit types of sex that you could have. It's just something to be aware of.
Interesting. So we're almost through this list, you guys. There's like so many.
I know. I know. One that we didn't, or that was back when we were talking about gender, male versus female, I wanted to bring up, I have been around certain feminist groups who talk about trans people as not being feminine enough, they're not understanding the female essentially experience.
I see.
Right.
And how difficult and not okay I think that is, because it's essentially like grouping people who have maybe grown up with a penis and then decide, or you know like, hey, I am actually a woman, I'm going to transition into that, for feminists to say, hey, that's not a real thing.
Well, that's the thing, is I feel like that's feminism that's so based around just like the rights of biological females. I mean, I thought that one of the definitions of feminism was just this belief that all human beings should be treated equal.
Well, exactly.
You know?
Well, it's funny. I was one of the workshops that I was leading at the retreat, like, almost got into a big argument between some people about specifically the definition of feminism as it relates to that. Is it about women or is it about equality for everybody?
Yeah.
And the thing that I did there is I was just like, whoa, 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 stop. Like, this is not the subject of the discussion we're having today.
Yeah.
We're not going to go there. The tricky thing about this is that there isn't some, like, ruling body that decides this is the definition of feminism.
Exactly.
That's the thing. It's this...
I'm totally taking us off on a little bit of tangent here,
but
I think I actually was thinking about this earlier today, that, like, socially we have this weird hang-up with, like, if women are in equal positions of power, that means that women must be more powerful, or it must be about giving women a bunch of power, and that relates to anthropology, actually, because they find that when anthropologists... like, pretty much all of the cultures that anthropologists have labeled as matriarchal, very few of them are actually societies where women have more power than men. Most of them are societies where it's actually a pretty equal division of labor. And, like, they're more egalitarian. It's just that social researchers saw that women have any power,
and then they're
and
like,
labeled
that's
it
a matriarchal
as a matriarchy.
Society.
And so that's what I feel has happened with feminism, where it's like women are trying to get power or equal rights. That must mean it's all about women.
Right.
And what seems to apparently scare some men, like we talked about in our last episode, the red pill.
That was 2 episodes ago.
Yes, 2 episodes ago, exactly.
Anyway, shall I get us through the end of this
list? Let's keep going. So family, having children or not.
Yeah, of course, different privileges available to you if you don't have children, obviously,
because definitely women, in my opinion, still are seen as like needing to have kids to be valid human beings on this planet to a lot of people.
There is a lot of pressure for that,
Certainly. But then it's going to be way harder for a woman who's working and raising a child to go on many dates.
Yeah, that's another factor, of course. Things like having your extended family around or not. For instance, if you do have kids, it is very easy to be like, oh, grandma's lives with us, so she's going to watch the kids. Or aunt and uncles live with us, so they're going to watch the kids. Or even things just like, I'm heading out of town, and will you take care of my dogs? Because I have this extended family around. Then that also can be a lack of privilege, because it's like I have a lack of privacy because my family's here all the time. And of course, every aspect of family can affect your privilege or lack thereof, you know, such as having parents who are still together or not. Parents who are still together happily, or parents who are still together not so happily. Two parents who are alive or not. You know, things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Another one, the last one on our list here, is also body type and attractiveness.
Yeah.
And this one is, you know, attractiveness is tricky because
it's subjective.
And one cool thing that I heard, and I wish I could remember the name of the researcher who was talking about this, but was saying that it's actually a pretty unique thing in humans that we are attracted to different things.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, in most animals, there is sort of a trait that is the attractive thing, right? It's like whichever bee does the best dance, it's like that's
like
the
your
one.
Your tail feather is like the biggest or the brightest
or the reddest.
Or the reddest,
right?
Or your call is like the loudest.
That there's sort of a clear, like, this is the most attractive, everyone wants to mate with this, and then less, you know, going down that scale. Whereas with humans, you know, there's this whole range. You know,
and different people like different things.
Yes, right.
There are certainly some overarching
but there is. We
here.
Still have this idea of traditional attractiveness, where it's like, even though maybe as a man you are so drawn to women who are like overweight, maybe even obese, you know, people are drawn to that.
Absolutely,
but it's like you're probably more likely to be shamed for being attracted to that rather than embraced by this idea of like, oh yeah, we're attracted to everything, you know. It's like, because you're not attracted to someone who's traditionally attractive.
So this, you know, in terms of privilege, this can have to do with you know, body types, as well as just sort of attractiveness, whatever that means within your culture and where you are in your community, but it is definitely a factor, and I would say a significant one.
Absolutely.
You know, there have been studies showing that actually attractiveness is one of the largest advantages in terms of getting hired for a job or not.
Interesting.
So there's definitely some, there's a lot of things like that. I did want to go back real quick to our discussion about when Emily brought up about you know, feminism, talking about that trans women couldn't be part of feminism because they haven't had the female experience or whatever. That some people would say and when we were talking about this earlier, I just wanted to bring up again that idea that part of the problem there is this assumption that the most significant division between people is their gender.
Is their gender,
right? That there could be two women who had incredibly different upbringings from each other, but somehow we've made this decision that the parts of that that make it female are more important than any of those others, even though one, you know, grew up in Nigeria and the other one grew up in London, right?
Yeah.
Like, whatever it is, those are much bigger differences probably between those two than just the similarities they have as a woman.
Yeah.
But no one would question that both of them could be part of feminism or would have shared, quote, the female experience. And I think that's the same is true, like we talked about in our episode about the red pill, that there isn't this sort of universal way that women are, and there's also not this universal way that men should behave or experiences that they've had or any of that. And so with all of these ideas of privilege, we do need to be aware of that. Like when Dedeker was talking about intersectionality, it's not about sort of a you have it or you don't, right? You have this kind of privilege or you don't, or you have privilege, period, or you don't. It's just about understanding that there are these differences and that you, the types of privilege that you do have, you're probably not even aware of.
That is the ultimate privilege, right? Is being able to be not aware of your privilege. Which I think is why it's so important to have these conversations, because like every single time I have a conversation or every single time I do any research or any reading on this, like I always find something where I'm like, oh wow, I didn't even realize that either I had that privilege or that I don't have that privilege.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh wow, I didn't even think about that, you know? And so I think it really is so important to be, to be exploring these things.
For a long time now, we've been fans of adamandeve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love adamandeve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI.
We've talked about it a little bit already when we were going through kind of our big list of privilege, which, by the way, is far from a comprehensive list.
Yes.
As I said, we're constantly uncovering new things to think about. And right. I'm sure there are so many people listening out there who are aware of so many more that we didn't hit.
Of course.
But, of course, all of these can have an effect on someone who is seeking or in a non-monogamous relationship or is trying to take part in the polyamorous community. You know, obviously some of the things that we talked about, like if you have kids or not, if you're married or not. But there's three big ones that always tend to come up in these discussions. And one of the big criticisms of the poly community is that it's populated by mostly people who are white, people who are educated, and people who are usually middle class or higher income bracket. And there's a number of reasons why it appears this way. You know, one of them being that, I mean, a lot of things are easier for people who are white, educated, and middle class, not just relationships, not just polyamory. But also when it comes to media coverage or studies, like these are the people who are more likely to come forward because the stakes are not as high. You know, it's kind of like, it's more comfortable to be out of the closet, you know. I mean, maybe it's not totally risk-free, but versus someone who's like poor and relying on family members for financial support, somebody who has a bunch of kids, you know, that there's much more to lose by having like your reputation threatened, essentially by kind of being out in this very public media.
Certainly. Interesting. This was just making me think of back when I was. I was spending a summer in Chicago when I was in college, and was listening to the Tavis Smiley show, like 13
Who's
years
Tavis ago. Smiley?
I have no idea what that is.
He has an NPR show now, or at least he did for a while, but this was when he was on like a local, Chicago station, on their like public radio station there. But the Tavis Smiley show was doing this segment about, essentially about non-monogamy in the black community in America specifically. And in this one, it was talking about more of a one-gender non-monogamy, where one man would have multiple girlfriends, but they were all okay with it. And they were making certain dubious conclusions about why this might be and stuff like that. But it is interesting, though, that in that discussion, the word polyamory was never mentioned, and even the word non-monogamy was never mentioned. It was more just like a thing we're doing rather than a label or like a group that we're belonging to. And I think that that could be part of it as well, is the fact that, you know, the term polyamory and sort of things like the Carista commune and stuff who coined a lot of the terms used in polyamory, you know, were white themselves.
Sort of
coming up with a label for it and making it a group you could be part of or not, essentially.
That's interesting.
Just reminded me of listening to that episode way back before Polly was on my radar
at all.
That's
so funny.
Well, I know that we talked about this a little bit when we had Jackie Stone on, specifically about like race and diversity within the Polly community. Kind of the catch 22 that happens here is that I know people who are not white, even if it's outside the realm of dating, because I think that race within dating is its own issue altogether.
Yeah,
you know, it's its own kind of worms, definitely. That people who are non-white, even just trying to go to like a polyamory mixer or discussion group or something, that first of all, they can feel very alienated. Like if they're the only non-white person to show up, it may not feel very safe. And then on the other hand, they can be very fetishized and kind of preyed upon because like, oh, you are exotic and you are not white, you know, and it can be kind of like commodified to a certain extent.
Right. Well, for anyone who has seen the movie Get Out, highly recommend it.
I still haven't seen it yet.
If you like, if you like thrillers and scary movies, it's really great. But in it, sort of this unsettling, almost like, anti-racism in a sense, like still really racism, but you know, that this white family is so interested in their daughter's black boyfriend.
Yeah.
In that kind of like, oh wow, look at you, you're so strong, and like you must be so athletic, or just, you know, just like kind of, but like in very praising positive ways, they're all like really into him, you know, but in a very racist way.
Yeah.
Like definitely identifying someone purely by their race, even if you're trying to say it's a positive thing.
Totally.
And I think that can also be a tricky thing to navigate in the poly community as well.
Definitely.
Another thing that Jackie brought up though in that episode is that there is actually a fairly large black and poly community.
But that
white people don't go to that either. Or so there is kind of this, even though there might be more of it than you think, there's not a lot of this mixing between them. And I think that's a little bit of a challenge that I would love to see more people taking active steps to try to bridge that gap.
Of course.
We should be at the forefront of that, or at least like starting to figure out a way to make that happen.
That's definitely something I've been thinking about a lot lately. Kind of ways to make that more accessible and kind of easier for people to do, and not just segregate themselves into these separate groups based on race, or even based on sexual preference. That you have like your gay polyamory and your lesbian polyamory, and then your mostly straight people and, you know, polyamory groups.
That
they get so separated from each other, though.
But I can totally understand not wanting to hang out in a group of straight poly people, like, it's mostly a bunch of like unicorn hunting fuckheads. I mean, and sorry, that's casting a lot of aspersions, being very negative, but I can totally understand why, even just as like a queer woman or a bisexual
woman, you wouldn't
want to just go hang out at a place where it's probably going to be a lot of straight couples who are just opening up their relationship and want to have like snag a bi babe. Like, I totally understand why.
And this is exactly the reason why this happens. Right? Is because it's like, if I'm a black and poly person, I'd rather not go to those things and try to mix those groups because I don't want to deal with it. I'd rather have a happy life in my community where I'm comfortable. And I get it. I understand it. It's a very challenging thing.
I mean, I guess the best thing you can do is try to educate. I mean, it's like, if you can educate people about like, hey, like, maybe don't be a fuckhead unicorn hunter.
You know,
hey, maybe don't go after someone because their ethnicity happens to turn you on, you know, or seem really exotic.
Speaking about education, we're going to go back to what we spoke about earlier. And the stigma behind not having, like, a college-level education, for example.
I think that's interesting because I think that... Because, again, that's the other criticism, is that it's mostly just a bunch of educated people in the poly community. And I'm trying to think about that. Like, is it because it's, like, there's already this frustrating thing that, like, through high school, we don't really get any education about relationships or... or questioning relationships,
just
or questioning culture,
you know?
And so then it's like, people who do go to college, they're more likely to be exposed to those discussions, those you know, different cultures, different ways of thinking, different schools of thought.
I feel like I would argue that it's more, has nothing to do with the education and has everything to do with socioeconomic status. I would say it's more that.
That
it's, if you're someone whose family sends you to college,
then you're going to be seen
that
as
you're more likely to feel that security to be able to try alternative things and not feel like you're going to lose your family support or that you're never going to be able to have a job or that you know, something bad's going to happen to you because of it. I guess I would tend to come down way more on that side of the argument.
Leads to the next point, talking about income and socioeconomic level, because like, if you, and it doesn't mean that like you have to be rich to be polyamorous,
but if you have money to go out on dates,
but that's the thing, if you have money to go on dates, if you have the ability to buy clothes at least once a month, or to go out to dinner whenever you like, or to pay to attend poly conferences, because they are really expensive. You know, or to pay for therapy, because therapy is ridiculously expensive. You know, and and as we mentioned in our episode about therapists, like more therapists becoming aware of this, trying to have sliding scale fees, but it's even sliding scale fees can still be
expensive.
Really expensive, especially if it's on an ongoing basis.
And especially
like, that's a lot of privilege to carry, not only into a relationship, but right. or dating, but also into non-traditional dating at the same time.
Yeah, if you're going to be going out almost every night a week, it's just not that we necessarily do that, but people who are but people who are super polysaturated, I mean, whose partners expect to see them once a week.
And I mean, I do have to say, like, all three of us have our own mixture of privileges and disadvantages.
God, yes.
And I mean, all three of us are definitely not rich people or even middle class, really, I think, technically.
And
we've managed to make it work without going out on a bunch of dates every week. But there's still, like, a certain amount of privilege.
I mean, we do represent... essentially what is to, what is being talked about here.
We're white.
We are white. We all went to college.
And none of us are attractive.
None of us are, like, in danger of being evicted.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Like, none of us are in danger of being homeless
scale,
or things
right?
like that.
Like, we may not... You know, when we really look at what are the sort of standards for being middle class or whatever, we're like, oh yeah, we're really not doing so good. But I don't feel that on a daily basis.
Yeah, exactly.
We still have enough money to live in one of the most wealthy cities in America, if not the world. So,
right.
And to live
comfortably. I think the other thing to keep in mind also is that to create long-lasting relationships, there needs to be a certain amount of personal stability.
Yeah.
So things like... Mm-hmm. I can stay in the same place, whether that's the same city or the same apartment or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not having to hop around living with family members things like that. That if your life is such that it is more, like, quote-unquote less stable in that way, that it is a lot harder to maintain not only a relationship but multiple relationships at the same time.
Well, and also in terms of tying it also to having kids, whether you can afford a babysitter or not. Or whether you
afford
have
a baby at all or
people
not.
Who can do that for you. Which leads into kind of the last topic.
And let me tell you, you know what?
Tell me about it.
Jason and I went to a sex shop yesterday.
And,
like, we just went just to, like, buy condoms, you know, like, just, you know, cheap stuff.
We were the most boring vanilla people
there.
We were the most boring
in the sex shop. But, like, we stopped and, like, looked around at, like, all the stuff, you know, and, like, we didn't buy anything. But I had these thoughts. I was like, God, like, all this stuff is really expensive. Like, lingerie and sex toys and fancy lube and, like, all of these things are really expensive. Like, huh, like, this is, like, this in itself is a privilege. Like, being able to go out and buy something unique for either yourself or for your sex life with someone else is such an extreme privilege because of how expensive these things are.
And this is even sex shop stuff that, like, in terms of their kink BDSM gear is, like, shitty stuff.
It's shitty stuff.
Really?
Right? It's not even nice stuff. It's like the mass-produced BDSM stuff.
Crappy faux leathers, whatever. But, like, the people who are really into that scene, those are incredibly expensive things that they'll have in that duffel bag they bring to the dungeon with them, right? But, yeah, certainly. That does apply there as well. Do you want to talk to us about families?
I do. To kind of start to bring us home here, I think it's interesting, like, something that, like, it really irks me, like, the media coverage that really paints polyamory in this light of, like, it being more enlightened, or especially when there's media coverage of people who are co-parenting together. I mean, I don't know, it's a double-edged sword, because it's, like, it's so great to see them highlighting people who are doing different things, like, maybe it's a triad co-parenting together, or more, a bigger polycule that's co-parenting together, or cohabiting, or doing any number of things, but then at the same time, like, it's painted in this light of, like, look at this new crazy thing that people are doing. And it's always white people. Like, I've never seen one of those stories that has involved anyone of color, at least not that's come through my newsfeed. It's been all white people. But the thing is that it's, like, people who have been non-white and, like, non-middle class have been doing things like this for centuries, for millennia, because of circumstance, you know, where it's like, well... we can't afford to have a house, just me and my husband and our baby. Like, so we need to invite, like, friends and roommates and maybe, like, aunts and uncles to live with us to help take care of kids because we can't afford childcare, you know? And so these have been circumstances or, like, living situations that have worked out quite well because I do believe that human beings were meant to co-parent in larger groups than two people.
Well, even in Europe, I mean, it's very, like, it's a very prevalent thing to have multiple generations living in the same house.
The same
in some countries more than others.
Sure.
For certain,
Yeah.
But, like, I remember... an Indian friend talking about, you know, an Indian friend was talking to an American friend, and she was, the American friend was talking about how, she's like, well, you know, why do you still live with your family? Like, yeah. I can't imagine living with my family. I love having my own place.
Yeah.
And her Indian friend, because of being raised in a different culture, was like, what do you, I can't even imagine not living with my mom. Like, that would be so awful. That would be weird.
Yeah.
That it's not like a, oh, I have to do this because I can't. It like really does depend on the culture that you're a part of, that you're raised in.
So that's the thing, is it's more that like what a lot of people are discovering is like, oh, actually this nuclear family thing maybe is not the best.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's a fairly new development.
It is a fairly new development, and maybe it's not the best. And so, but it's not like we're inventing this new revolutionary way. Like this, these have been around
for sure.
Many, 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 many years.
Yeah. Having a family of more than two parents essentially has been the normal way that humans have done things for way longer than we've done.
And some would argue also the same with like with multiple partner relationships as
well. No,
that
absolutely.
This isn't a new thing that we just all discovered.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right,
like,
right.
We've been doing this for a long time. Tribal communities have been doing this for a very long time.
Certainly.
Yeah.
And even just people, you know, as Dedeker points out in her book, in her history section, that even this more modern polyamory, not even talking about tribal living, but even though that's something that is a newer term, polyamory, people have been doing it a lot longer.
For sure.
And it's just because we live in a day of the internet where it's easier to find community across the world, that now there's sort of a label for it, and it's kind of a whole movement instead of just being a thing that some people did.
Totally.
So, I mean, when people start thinking about this and kind of questioning their own privilege or lack thereof, and exploring the different arenas where they may have privilege and where they don't. I mean, what are people supposed to do with this information?
I mean, awareness is huge.
Yeah,
I feel like just being aware of it is actually a really big
checking your privilege.
Right. Is kind of that I would say, honestly, like if nothing else, like the two things I would want someone to take away from this episode is being aware that they probably have types of privilege they didn't realize they had is one part. And also that there's some that they don't have. But more importantly, to understand you do have privilege that you might not be aware of. And then two is that because you have that privilege doesn't mean that you're a bad person or that everything's been easy in your life or that you've never suffered. Right? That all of us have hard things in our lives, and all of us have things that we can be proud of. And just because you had privilege in some way or another doesn't mean that those achievements are invalidated.
But it's important to understand the suffering of others as well, and realize that we're all not so different. We are incredibly different, but at the end of the day, like, we all are bound together by this mutual, like, goodness and this mutual suffering of just living on this planet that's dying around us. Sorry. I'm not pleased with the current administration and their decision-making.
Okay, well,
we can't talk about this right now.
With that,
anyways,
where can they find us?
All right, yeah. If you want to check out more of our stuff, you can go to multiamory.com. We're on iTunes, Stitcher. I was just reading through some of our reviews and just being so incredibly moved by all of you who have taken your time so far to write about what you get out of this show, what it means to you. If you haven't written a review, we would love it if you did. It does a lot, actually, to help people find us.
For sure.
Because there's a lot of podcasts out there, and if this is something you like and wish more people listen to, then writing a review is a great way to help do that. All right. I think that's it. Thank you so much. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.